we're about to see and how close to most people's hearts. Welcome all. We are gathered here today to start with the hearings on the Cooperative Banks Bill. According to our program, we're going to start with the Banking Association. I see they are delayed, so we are going to start with a presentation by the Competition Commission, represented here by Mr. Keith Weiss, who is the senior economic analyst with the Competition Commission, and Mr. Mzodumo Kubushe, acting divisional manager, compliance division. Gentlemen, we have allocated 35 minutes for your presentation, including our time for engagement. We have received your written submissions, so we would just want to appeal that people stick to the salient features of their presentation so that we are able to engage without necessarily going into the entire presentation. We also have National Treasury in attendance, the back there, the usual suspects, they were here, and the main drivers of the bill. In attendance, we also have our state law advisors, Ms. Kumedele Ngema and Mr. Mongameli Wetcher, who will be sitting here in order to advise us on matters that require legal expertise. But without wasting time, we have started late, 10 minutes late. We're supposed to have started at 5:30. But your 35 minutes remain intact, so you won't be punished for us having started late. Without wasting time, I'm going to request that you then address us on matters that relate to this bill. Thank you.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Keith Weiss. My colleague, Mr. Rubushe, will be taking some questions together with me after we've gone through the presentation. In an earlier submission regarding the Cooperative Banks Bill from the Competition Commission, it was noted that entry and expansion in the banking industry is difficult. The high levels of concentration coupled with high barriers to entry in the sector spark concern around a so-called complex monopoly. Now, despite very positive efforts by the incumbents to roll out and deliver banking services to the formerly unbanked and low-income households, this nevertheless inherently and naturally presents a restriction on the ability of the banking sector to deliver banking to so-called unbanked and low-income households. So, given that the Cooperative Banks Bill is a very positive and laudable means to address this, it aims at creating a development strategy and regulatory environment conducive for the promotion of the development and growth of cooperative banks, and it is most certainly within the spirit and objectives of the Competition Act that competition-enhancing measures are taken to facilitate, amongst others, the promotion and advancement of small business. In this regard, the Competition Commission therefore welcomes the bill as a positive step towards extending affordable banking services to all South Africans, including the unbanked, and in particular, of course, by promoting the entry and expansion of alternative providers of banking services. This in turn will contribute to increase participation in our economy and hopefully also increase competition in the banking industry to the betterment of social and consumer welfare. However, as we pointed out in our earlier comments on a previous version of this bill, the success of this legislation will depend on its flexibility and the extent to which it will be effective in lowering the entry and operational barriers that currently characterize the banking sector. We will talk briefly on implications for competition in the banking industry. A cautionary note more than anything regarding the determination and appointment of supervisors. Our more specific comments regarding the implications of consequential amendments to the National Payment System Act that would follow the promulgation of the Cooperative Banks Bill. And this relates then to possible limitations on primary cooperative banks. And then we comment on the role of the competition authorities in recommending and assessing the competition implications of amalgamation. I think I would be repeating myself if I went through this. We made the point that it is very positive for competition that this will be enacted, and in particular promote the entry of alternative banking service providers, and lower the challenge, of course, is that entry and operational barriers be effectively lowered to promote competition. Now, a cautionary note regarding the appointment of supervisors. Chapter 8 provides for the appointment of supervisors. This is a welcome step as it allows for the effective administration of the Act. However, it is important that the supervisors apply clear and objective criteria in fulfilling this role. This is particularly true in areas where a supervisor is permitted to exercise some discretion. One function of the supervisor is to grant applications for the registration of cooperative banks. In terms of Section 8.2 of the Bill, the supervisor may grant an application for registration subject to any condition he or she may determine. Now, although Chapter 10, and this is a very good thing, does provide for appeals against decisions of the supervisor, it is important that in any such determination, the supervisor apply objective criteria. Opaque conditions and determinations can potentially hamper the efforts of entities to enter the sector, particularly if it introduces uncertainty and unpredictability in the process. And I think there's some experience and some issue. Yes, there's a concern on the part of would-be and actual entrants historically that the criteria have not always been clear, and it's seen, if even at the level of perception, as a difficulty for entering and expanding within the sector. So it's a cautionary note there. It's not clear whether any further amendments would address that, but it should be given due consideration. Now, our main concern and the main issue that we wanted to raise related to consequential amendments to the National Payment System Act that would follow promulgation of this bill. We note an exclusion of any reference to primary cooperative banks in the amended National Payment System Act. Now, this implies that primary cooperative banks would be precluded either directly or by way of sponsorship from participating in clearing and settlement activities. It is not clear whether this would mean that a primary cooperative bank would only be able to offer transaction services on its own infrastructure. This may limit the scope of payment services that the primary cooperative bank can offer to its members, and that potentially its ability to compete effectively. We suggest that greater clarity be provided on primary cooperative banks' rights and obligations in respect of the payment services requiring clearing and settlement in both the Cooperative Banks Bill and in the proposed amendments to the National Payment System Act. And I think just to develop on that, it follows now in that it implies certain limitations for primary cooperative banks. Section 14 of the Cooperative Banks Bill distinguishes between primary, secondary, and tertiary cooperative banks. As we've noted, the proposed amendment to the NPS Act is silent with regards to primary cooperative banks' requirements in terms of clearing and settlement. However, in terms of Section 14.1b of the Cooperative Banks Bill, a primary cooperative bank may open savings accounts of its members in the name of each member, into which that member may deposit or withdraw money, and from which that member may instruct the cooperative bank to transfer or pay money. It is not clear how some of these payment activities, which would naturally involve clearing and settlement, would be facilitated in the case of primary cooperative banks. Is it intended that primary cooperative banks be specifically limited in this regard? Not clear. If a primary cooperative bank wished to broaden the scope of its payment services, would it be facilitated through some process, or would it have to converge to a secondary or tertiary cooperative bank? Those are questions that we're asking and we're not clear on, but it certainly appears given the absence of a direct reference to the prime cost of banking, the national payment system amendments, it may be limited. In offering the payment services that Section 14.1b refers to, for example, transferring money from one account to another bank's account or withdrawing cash from an ATM from another account, implies that some clearing and settlement role would be involved. If that's limited, then it would imply that those payment services are limited only to the infrastructure of the particular primary bank, and that would limit it in its ability to compete and expand effectively. So we want to know whether that is intended. We would prefer banks have a clearer ability to participate in payment activities that require clearing and settlement, or are there other means that are not clear to us by which primary banks could then perform that greater scope of activities beyond their infrastructure. Lastly, Chapter 5 deals with the amalgamation, division, conversion, transfer, judicial management, and winding up of cooperative banks. To the extent that any amalgamation, conversion, or transfer may constitute a merger in terms of Chapter 3 of the Competition Act, I think rather than say it's not clear, we would want to want clarity on the role that the Competition Commission would play. It is understood that the Banks Act applies here, so that the Minister, in that regard, the Minister of Finance has ultimate jurisdiction over bank mergers, but we feel it is important that the Commission be notified of such transactions and that an opportunity be given to assess the potential competition implications and make appropriate recommendations as provided in terms of Chapter 3 of the Competition Act. So we recommend that greater clarity provided in this regard. We note as well that it's important, and I think that the Act does allow for it, but certainty must be provided here, that a working relationship be established between the Commissioner and the Supervisor and or the agency as applicable. So just to conclude, all in all, we are very much in favour of the Cooperative Banks Bill. It's certainly in line with the objectives of the Competition Act as well. We would want to play an active role in the consideration, insofar as we make recommendations on the competition implications of amalgamations and divisions. We note our particular concerns around the limitations on the role of primary cooperative banks, insofar as there seem to be absent in the amendments to the National Payment System Act, and our cautionary notes regarding discretion of supervisors. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. That's it from the Competition Commission. Are there any questions, comments from members? Mr. Gibson, let's see.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just two brief questions. The presenter referred to Section 8.2 of the bill, and I take his point about no clear criteria to guide the supervisor in fulfilling the role. But Section 8.1, of course, does spell out when registration must be granted. Is there a suggestion that 8.2 in some way qualifies that, and that with some of these conditions in 8.1 not being present, you would still be able to grant a license in terms of 8.2? Or isn't it the other way around, that what in 8.1 must be present, and then in addition to that, certain conditions can be imposed? How do you read it? That's the first question. And secondly, you refer to Section 14.1b of the bill, and you more or less ask whether it's by accident or design. The fact is, of course, that as it stands, it seems to me to be that there is an intention to limit rather than open up, but there is no such thing as one size fits all. So it's quite possible that the solution will be tailored for various cooperative banks or categories of cooperative banks. Section 14.1G in fact gives the minister very significant powers, because the minister may give permission to conduct any additional banking services as he may prescribe. Do you similarly believe that that is too broad and should be circumscribed? What advice would you give about this 14.1b, 14.1g, to make it clearer and to fit your objective?
Can I request that you note these questions? I'll take a number of questions and then you will respond to all of them. But have you noted this? If you haven't, maybe let me allow you to deal with this, and then we because I hadn't told you that that's going to be the approach. You want to deal with it?
I can deal briefly with
it. Okay, fine. Okay, can I just get the other hand? Are there any other questions so that I can note them in the information? Okay, yeah, go ahead.
I might have followed you completely on your first question regarding Section 8.2. I think upon registration and upon granting a license, as I understand it, certain conditions may then be applied by the supervisor. And it's in that regard, and I'll quote A2, the supervisor may grant an application for registration subject to any conditions he or she may determine. Now, of course, those conditions have implications for the effectiveness of the particular entity in participating and competing in a difficult sector. So it is very important that there be clear and objective criteria around those conditions. So I think more than anything, it's a cautionary note. There is a positive fact of an ability to appeal, of course, decisions of the supervisor, and that may address that to some extent, although one would want to avoid as much as possible having to go into legal processes by requiring greater objectivity and clarity in conditions. And I have to add that's an issue that actually applies across different areas of the banking sector, insofar as non-incumbent role and participation in the national payment system and in banking is concerned. It's potentially a problem when criteria of participation are not clear and objective.
Follow that up by asking whether the suggestion is that 8.2 to some extent contradicts 8.1. Because 8.1 says you must register the cooperative bank if the following conditions are met. And then 8.2 says they may apply whatever conditions they like. Is it contradictory, or is it sort of supplementary and complementary? In other words, the absolute conditions must be there, and then they can have others. How did you read this?
I must be honest, I didn't read it as contradictory. I hadn't thought of it that way. But
I also do not want us to begin to change your submission.
The submission was not that there was a contradiction there, but rather that there just be certainty, greater clarity and objectivity.
Okay. If you could at some stage, Gibson, do you want to present that as your own opinion? Let's do that.
There was
a question on 14, on Section 14.
I think there were two parts to that question. One was regarding whether we, in providing greater clarity around the scope for participation by primary cooperative banks, whether these could be tailored in. I think that's correct. There may be a good reason why there'd be some limitations, but there needs to be clarity there. And I think it needs to be opened up to some extent. We want to be sure that they're not unnecessarily limited, but if that requires a tailoring it in and building it in properly, we would absolutely support that idea.
I don't don't want to belabor the point, but maybe the complexity of Isingis, maybe if it was written in my language, it might be much simpler. But the way I understand, I mean, I would argue that the way I understand it, section 8.2 says that you make an application to the supervisor or the registrar. The registrar says, yes, proceed to the banking, I'm giving a license, subject to this condition. That positive, you would only operate as a primary cooperative because you have not built sufficient capacity, whether human resource or infrastructure. After you have satisfied the following conditions, then you proceed to become a secondary cooperative. That's the way I understand it. But it's like I'm saying, if it was written in my language, that could be clear. Because the way it's written, you say the supervisor will grant you and may grant an application, but subject to certain conditions. Not that there will be new conditions for the application that will apply for the requirements for registration. Because Section 7 covers that. Section 7 clearly states that the following are the requirements for registration. I'm not sure, but it's a matter that we can face with data.
Yeah, no, the committee will have ample time to do that. At the moment, I just want us to confine ourselves to the areas that have been raised by the Competition Commission. The difficult thing, Mr. Lord, is that when the version in the CPG is printed, we will have gone through this process. So I wonder, Kusana, can you help me? No. I don't want you to respond to this one. If you could provide the simulator with a separate version of yeah. But also maybe, let me give you a minute if you actually want to throw a spanner in just resolving this, because we seem to be having different versions of interpretation of Section 8.1 and 8.2.
Yeah, thanks. I think Honorable Chair, I think Honorable Moloto is correct in saying that when the registration takes place, for instance, the Section 1, Section 8.1 does spell out those conditions. But for instance, if one of the conditions says that you must have sufficient human resource requirements, what does that really mean? I think that's dependent on the case-by-case basis. So when it comes on one application, you determine their fit and proper requirements, they may be different from the next application. So the registrar at that point in time could very well say that, I think I'm happy with your credit risk expertise, but I would like you to beef up your operational risk expertise. And in beefing up your operational risk expertise, I would like you to go to the agency and take this following course and so on. So that condition that we request in 8.1.2 is specifically to sort of fill up the gaps that may have been noticed in the application process. So that's just that just one option.
Okay. You also will have ample time to respond on the 31st on Friday. I just wanted to clarify that because there seems to be different interpretations. Okay. I had Mr. Johnson's hand up. Mr. Blatter, have you exhausted yours? Are you okay? No, we're not going back to April.
We avoid the most controversial question that I was about to pose.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Chair, let me just...
I was saying go ahead and avoid it. Yeah, what's your question? Go ahead, Mr. Blatter.
Yeah, it's quite a complex one. I just want to find out what's the current situation in the Banks Act in terms of approval of amalgamations or mergers. What role does the Competition Commission play? And because you are giving the submission that you want to be consulted on the mergers of cooperatives, I think it's more of a broader question, because I would argue that a merger of Pick and Pay and ShopRite is different from a merger of banks. Because there are complex issues involved in banking, its impact on monetary policy, opening it up for foreigners, it has a major implication. I just want to get your understanding on this.
Mr. Johnson, we'll take both questions.
Chair, I think the question for me also would undoubtedly go back again to National Treasury. But thinking also that maybe the Competition Commission would also have dealt this, chiefly among others on the national payment system, as the amendments are going to be done by National Treasury, on that one. For me, it's also the membership, you know, of that national payment system, specifically the structure called bank sales or something to that effect, wherein, you know, this cooperative bank, you know, would have to be part of. It's more of a question directed to, but also as one of the major concerns, as you are going to be part of that national payment system. The other one, which I thought also, you know, would have been pointedly raised, would relate to the charges. You have been dealing with these issues as competition commission, bank charges, to understand whether there is any satisfaction from your side on this matter. It is also a matter that I thought you might wish to point an issue on.
Thank you. I think the Honourable Johnson has touched on the question I wanted to ask on the monopoly of the Big Four by, you know, by the Payment Association of South Africa, because any other smaller institution cannot participate unless it's a member of PASA. Now, as a Competition Commission, your duty is to make sure that there's competition in the country. Now, what are you saying about the monopoly of banks by, you know, monopolizing the membership of PASA? Secondly, on the issue of clause number 7, what do you think about that? Don't you think it raises actually the interference for far away people in the bundles, in the farms, because I don't think we can expect the president in the farm to have a knowledge of cooperative banks, especially 7C, where he must have an experience to run cooperative banks. What if one starts a smaller bank out in the bundles, farming there? We want to form the cooperative and we don't have somebody with that experience. That doesn't that raise actually the biggest interest?
Mr. Bickey.
Thank you, Chair. Well, my first question would be an addendum to the speaker before the last. That is the bank charge. Would they be able to provide any statistics as to the satisfaction of the people about the bank charge? So this is going to end up to his question. And my question would be that in the presentation, mention is made of the preclusion. Mention is made of the preclusion of corporate banks from settlements and clearances. Now my question would be, what are the consequences of that preclusion? Thank you, Chair.
Okay, your response is in the remaining 5 minutes. I'm being very generous. I should be giving you 5 minutes.
Okay, thank you. The first question related to the Commission's role in assessing mergers. It's quite right that banking is special, it's different. And I think for that reason it stands alone as the one sector where the Commission does not have ultimate, or rather the competition authorities do not have ultimate jurisdiction in approving or disapproving of these mergers. Of course, it is the Minister of Finance who, as I understand it, my colleague will correct me if I'm wrong, can remove the Commission's jurisdiction. And the same would apply here to the Banks Act in that regard applies. Yeah, and there may be broader and legitimate policy reasons for that. But be that as it may, the Commission nevertheless, even in big transactions where the Minister does take over jurisdiction, very importantly must be the appropriate body to assess the competition effects of those transactions and make appropriate recommendations to the Minister. And as I understand it, that has historically happened and should continue also with cooperative banks as well. The second question related to the role of banks and participation in the MPS. There was also a question about bank charges and unsatisfaction, and I'll address, there were a few other questions that related to that, so I'll deal with it in one response. Look, the appropriate piece of legislation to critically look at when one talks of participation in the National Payment System is, of course, the National Payment System Act. We only noted insofar as there would be consequential amendments to that Act, what the implications might be for cooperative bills. It may not be appropriate to get into all of the issues now of the National Payment System and bank serve, of course, being the switch at the center of that system. I think insofar as cooperative banks are properly catered for through the consequential amendments, they would then have the same issues that other participants have with the National Payment System Act itself and regulation around that. And I think that is a whole separate issue in itself that would have to be addressed by directly looking at the National Payment System Act and possibly the Banks Act as well. The Competition Commission currently has a bank inquiry underway, as you are aware. A big aspect of the terms of reference of that inquiry is to look at entry to and participation in terms of access to the national payment system. Of course, bank service is a very important feature in that. That inquiry is still underway, and the recommendations will most likely come out later this year. So, obviously, I can't really comment on that now. I think the same would apply on the bank charges issue. Item on the terms of reference of the inquiry is, of course, the level and structure of charges. But it, of course, goes without saying that if there's more entry, if there's more alternatives, if there's more competition, and cooperative banks are one form of alternative entry and competition, that should stimulate greater price competition and have a positive impact in bringing charges down. If the thrust of cooperative banks is to deliver services to low-income areas, to the so-called formerly unbanked, then presumably that they would come in with a view to addressing this issue of the unaffordability of banking, in particular around bank charges. But that issue will be addressed through the recommendations of the inquiry, which is still underway. Now, I think I need to be clear, we'll put our comments today are on behalf of the Commission and not the banking inquiry that is not yet finished. And I think that largely addresses the question regarding the monopoly of this is the third question of the Big Four banks. That is, the term, the state of art, the complex monopoly has been used. There's a question over how well-founded it is in theory, but the fact of the matter is we have a highly concentrated sector dominated by the Big Four banks, and that poses particular challenges to the competition authorities. Again, that is a separate issue that needs to be looked at broadly in terms of all the relevant legislation and regulation around banking. But of course, this bill allows for the entry of alternatives. It allows for greater competition and is a positive step in addressing that worry around a complex monopoly. Again, regarding, it follows from this as well, of course, PASA, there was a question about PASA. PASA is the industry representative body of payment system operators. What is relevant here, and it does relate somewhat to the MPS consequential amendments, is if, for example, the tertiary cooperative bank is engaged in clearing and settlement, its role and its rights as a member of PASA, or in relation to a member of PASA, if it's sponsored by one of those members, needs to be catered for. Now, ultimately, if there are concerns there, that must be addressed through a critical assessment of the National Payment System Act. So I think all that we would achieve with the COP banks bill is to make sure that the consequential amendments don't necessarily preclude any participants in the cooperative bank space. But the difficult issues require critical assessment of the National Payment System Act. there was a question in regarding Section 7 and whether the requirement for registration pose a particular barrier to entry. Look, in and of themselves, no. You need these requirements. There's a set of skills and knowledge that's required in order to be effective in running a bank, and the same would apply to a cooperative bank. I think the Act does apply for an agency. It does provide quite strongly for development and nurturing and an agency that would play that role in developing skills and knowledge. So the barrier to entry would be if all those who would be wanting to enter into that sector did not have adequate access to that process of development and learning. But I think it is important, given the sensitivities in banking, given in the goal of the Act to protect deposits and funds, that minimum skills and knowledge be in place and be guaranteed before, say, registration is granted. So the issue there really is the agency properly resourced, and is it able to succeed in developing skills and talents and potential for entry into the sector? I think that addresses everything. So the last question related to the satisfaction regarding bank charges. I think the statistics and the conclusions around whether we see difficulties there in competition and whether they impact negatively on the level of bank charges and those kind of questions are core to the terms of reference of the banking inquiry, which is still underway and which will hopefully issue its recommendations before the end of this year.
Okay, thanks, Competition Commission. That brings us to the end of the presentation. I'm now going to request the Banking Association to come forward. Mr. Vadia. I'm informed that you are going to be speaking to the submission that has already been circulated, and members have it in their packs. The pack that was released on Wednesday when we took the submission. And those that do not have that, if they could just indicate. So that's the one that was circulated last week. Good morning and welcome, Mr. Kuvadia. The floor is yours.
Good morning, Chairperson and members, and firstly, my apologies for coming in a bit late. Victim to the vagaries of travel, Chair, unfortunately. Flight was delayed. Chair, unlike some other submissions we've made to your committee, which we usually have on the screen there and which are fairly detailed, this one, as you know, is a 1.5-page submission because we've had substantial interaction and engagement with National Treasury since 2004, in fact, when the bill was first put on the table, on this bill, and a number of our concerns or issues have been incorporated in the redrafting of the bill. So we don't have too much to add to what we've already engaged National Treasury on. We can certainly make our inputs to National Treasury available to your committee if your committee wants those inputs. But I'm not going to go through those inputs now. Let me also say, Chair, that I've had sight of the presentation that the Business Parliamentary Office is going to be making to your committee a little bit later. In my role as Deputy President of Business Unity South Africa, I'm obviously party to that presentation. I would also like to just say that we would, as the Banking Association, endorse that presentation. Briefly, Chair, are very supportive of this bill as a banking association representing the banking industry. I've quoted in our input two clauses, two paragraphs from the financial sector charter that already 4 to 5 years ago, at the time the charter was being negotiated and was signed, referred to second and third tier financial institutions, and the role that the established banking sector, if you like, should be playing in supporting such institutions. In the discussions and negotiations we had at that time, some sort of cooperative banks was certainly on the table. Not necessarily as fully encompassed in the bill, but some form of cooperative banking was certainly on the table. So the charter permits the banking sector to provide support and to provide banking to a broader range of financial institutions so that we can have a more diversified financial sector, and within that context we support this bill. We would certainly want to engage on an ongoing basis with National Treasury and other stakeholders once this bill becomes an act, to see what role the formal banking sector can play in providing support to these institutions, because we believe that, I think one of the participants just before me referred to the complexity of the banking sector, the complexity of just the area of banking in this country. And we believe that without appropriate support, cooperative banks will not be as successful as they can. We believe that they have a critical role to play in broadening access to financial services, particularly to low-income people. That is not to say that cooperative banks must concentrate only on low-income people, but I think that they have a particular role to play because of their structure, because they are by and large membership-based, and they are closer to a broader base of people than the formal banking sector is. And so we would want to support them. We have raised one issue with National Treasury that is not dealt with in the bill currently. And that is that cooperative banks, once legislated and regulated, will have to conform to some sort of CICA regulation. If people are to have confidence in those banks, and if the formal banking sector is to have sufficient confidence in that with cooperative banks. We are assured by National Treasury that this will be taken care of. They are discussing how it be taken care of, and we are satisfied with that assurance that it will be taken care of. But we believe that it is necessary for cooperative banks to be CICA compliant. Not necessarily to be compliant with the full gamut of CICA regulations and requirements, but to be compliant to the extent that depositor funds are protected, to be compliant to the extent that money laundering and so on does not happen, and to be compliant to the extent that there is confidence in those, in the cooperative bank, in both in the eyes of the public and in the eyes of the formal banking sector and other institutions that they will interact with. We also said, Chair, in one of our submissions to National Treasury, that while cooperative banks are important and they must be welcomed, I think that we must be careful that we do not see cooperative banks as a panacea to all the problems and all the challenges as far as access to banking goes. That it's one strata of institutions, financial institutions, that I think will play a critical role, but we must continue to look at innovative models of provision of financial services and allow such models to actually grow. We raised issues with National Treasury around things like regulatory capacity, the capacity of the regulators to actually manage the regulation of these banks, and we've also raised the issues about skills, which were also mentioned earlier here. I think that, again, without making the whole issue of skills very complex and without creating conditions that actually militate against the formation and growth of these banks. I think that we do need to be careful that appropriate skills are in place. If for no other reason than for the protection of the funds of the people who are going to deposit their money in these banks. And again, here I think the formal financial sector can play a role in providing skills, in developing skills, and we would like to see how we do that. So in conclusion, Chair, I think that with those comments, we are fully supportive of this bill, and we would want to continue to interact to see what the best role the banking sector can play would be going forward. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Mr. Kapadia. Perhaps if I may just check, in your submission, first page, you refer to paragraphs 7.11 and 7.2. Are those paragraphs in the financial sector charter?
7.11 and 7.12. These are paragraphs in the financial sector charter.
Okay.
And they refer to the stuff that I've got in brackets, skills transfer, staff secondment, infrastructure support, technical aid, admin support, and referral of business. That those are examples of the sort of backup that the former financial sector could give to cooperative banks.
Okay, are there any questions to the Banking Association? Mr. Murray.
Thank you, Chair. I just have three questions more for clarity for myself, also to understand the role in this whole process of the Banking Association. I assume all the big banks as members of the Banking Association, and maybe you can elaborate whether there's already primary banks that are members of the Banking Association. So that's the first one. And then secondly, in your point six, you refer to the partnership with registered banks. Could you just elaborate a bit on this, and what does that imply, that partnership that you are promoting there? And then lastly, on your point seven, where you are talking about the SICA compliance, but you're not very clear on that, and I just want to find out, what is your position? Do you accept that intent, or do you actually suggest that it should be more explicit, the compliance with the FICA regulations? Thank you, Chair.
Further questions? Mr. Asia.
Chair, I wanted to piggyback on the last question, which was raised, the issue of FICA. If it is addressed on regulation, as the gentleman is alluded on, would it make more impact as if it is enacted or it is put in the bill so that it can be more, to have more teeth than the regulations? Because to me, the regulations are issues of administration and other issues. But most of the essential issues should be on the bill itself. I want to hear your views on that.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairman. Mira, just the members of the Banking Association currently are every bank that is currently registered under the Bank Act. So we have approximately 34 members at this point in time, both South African banks and international banks. So it's not just the big four or the big five. Are any primary financial institution members at the moment? No. I think that developments like these, the Cooperative Banks Bill and other initiatives that begin to look at diversifying the financial sector does present challenges for us, because we are beginning a discussion to ask ourselves now, do we need to re-look at the membership of the Banking Association in light of these developments? So I think it is a question that we need to address, and we will certainly address amongst our members. Partnership with registered banks, let me address that by giving an example I know from previous experience before this committee, not maybe the most appropriate example, because the moment you talk about microfinance in front of this committee, we get particular reactions. But let me perhaps use that as an example to demonstrate what we mean. There was a time before the formation of the Microfinance Regulatory Council, which maybe not in an ideal way, but in some form or other began to get a handle on regulating the micro loan industry. Banks, former banks, were just not involved in the microfinance sector. And they weren't involved because primarily of reputational risk. There was no regulation of that sector. There were all sorts of practices in that sector, and for banks to get involved in any form in that sector from a reputation point of view would have been problematic. Once the MFRC was formed and we began to get some sort of regulation of that industry going, there were all sorts. Firstly, banks became involved directly. At the time, the Microfinance Regulatory Council closed and the National Credit Regulator took over. If my memory serves me correctly, I think 9-odd banks who were directly involved in microfinance were responsible for about 54% in value terms of the loans in that industry, as compared to 46-odd% from about 1,500 other microfinance financiers. And the reason for that was that it became regulated and the reputational risk became diminished. And the banks started having all sorts of relationships with bigger microfinanciers and so on, because there was some form of regulation. And here too, I think that if we have regulated, appropriately regulated cooperative banks, I think it opens up the way for the former banks to actually have different types of partnerships with those banks. Because the cooperative banks are regulated, there's no regulatory or reputational risk for former banks, which are heavily regulated and have significant accountability to the registrar. On FICA, and also addresses Mr. Fia's question, ideally we would want to see this in the bill. But in our discussions with National Treasury, they have indicated to us that they are talking about it and they will put on the table at some point how best to address this issue. They agreed in principle with us that cooperative banks do need to be FICA compliant in some form or other. And we are happy with their in principle assurance. We would want to engage with them on exactly how they put on the table they want to actually do this. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Mr. Kubadi. Short of the presentation, it has helped us make up for the time. Congress of South African Trade Unions and the House. I think you will be better. Are you going to be using the technology? Or you are going to be talking through the presentation that we have? How can you assist in setting up? We very limited time. I saw you had very elaborate and Kosacho and Nehawa, I've just got the names here. I do not have, maybe in your introduction, if you could actually say who's from Nehawa and what are your positions. I have you, Mfana Futisela. Are you? Is that Mfana Futisela? And Mr. Neil Newman. Tibaho. Are you Tibaho?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. If you could just, appropriately introduce.
Thanks, Chairperson. Once again, my name is Tibaho Pali. I'm the head of the Nehao Policy Unit. And, of course, I'm here on behalf of both Nehao and Kosati. Let me first generally say that as COSATU and NEHAU, we generally welcome and support the Cooperative Bank Bill of 2007. we think that it represents a significant improvement from the earlier draft we had back 2004. There's a history to this at COSAD in terms of our engagement with the bill. First and foremost, we have been generated a number of policy resolutions as affiliates of COSAD, not just on cooperative banks, but on cooperative movement in general, dating back as far as the 1990s. We have been part of the financial sector campaign led by the South African Communist Party, which has been campaigning for the wider and a broader access to financial services to the millions who are financially excluded. Among those campaigns has been a clear demand for alternative banking institutions, such as the cooperative banks. We are also party to the Financial Sector Summit Agreement, which clearly points out cooperative banks as one of those institutions that needs to be promoted and supported. And finally, we have been engaged through NEDLAC and partly through Parliament, engaging around this issue of the cooperative bank. So there's a background to it. But more importantly, as unions, we have been actively setting up and running savings and credit cooperatives. We are part of the general cooperative banking movement represented by SACOL, which will speak later more about the kinds of activities the movement has been through. So really our submission is based on a range of concrete experience as trade unions and as workers. And also we have tried to draw also from international experience of the cooperative banking movement, not just our own, particularly with reference to countries like Spain, the Mondragon experience, as well as Kenya. And for useful purposes, we have made attachments to those case studies in our submissions for members to look through at their own time. The first thing that we want to point out is that we think that cooperative banks have a major social and economic role in our country. Okay. I won't go through much of what we are presenting in our submission, but just to highlight some of the important features of a cooperative bank. First and foremost, that these are institutions owned and controlled by people. Okay, so bank customers are the owners of the bank. That's very, very important for the first time that people can own their own banks. The second principle is that, point is that cooperative banks, as controlled by people or by their bank depositors and customers, will have direct influence on bank policy. So what kind of policy banks adopt towards communities, but also interest rates and so on, the members, because they are the owners, will have direct influence on those particular areas of decision making, precisely because control is democratic. It's not based on how much money, how much shares you hold in the bank, but it's based on one member, one vote. And that's a very important principle that will ensure that even ordinary people, irrespective of the number of assets they have in the bank, will have a direct influence over the decision and the operation. The other important principle is that cooperative banks are not profit-orientated institutions. And I want to qualify that. necessarily means that they are not formed with the purpose of maximizing profit for their shareholders. They may produce profit, which is called surplus in a cooperative term, but that surplus is returned to the co-op and to its members. So it is more about addressing needs rather than addressing maximizations of profit. That distinguishes, of course, including online, as I said, with the conventional private bank institutions. The last point we want to make point is that the existing cooperatives, which are financial cooperatives, are the ones which are stand to benefit more from the new bill, precisely because they will become fully fledged banks, in a sense that they will be relatively liberated from the conventional linkages that they are, from the conventional bank. For instance, now you have to open, you are forced to open an account if you are a savings and credit cooperative with an existing one of the big four. If you have to do that, this bank allows, that's not a requirement for you to do that. So that's a very, very important development. Now, having said this thing about the importance, we think that the importance is not only to the cooperative banks themselves and their members, but also to the cooperative movement as a whole, as we know that there are other types of co-op in housing, in agriculture, and so on. We really think that this bank bill, cooperative bank bill, have a potential to contribute to the financing of other types of co-ops and potentially become even the primary source of capital for other types of co-ops. So we think that that is one important factor which will contribute to the growth of the movement as a whole. Having mentioned all these things, we, Chairperson, in page 6, we try to raise what we think could be some of the weaknesses in the bill. And we say this not to say that we are really saying that there is a serious, it's a matter of whether, if they are not in the bill, then the bill does not go forward. But we think that it's merely to strengthen the bill. Our recognition of those weaknesses is to try to strengthen the bill. And what are those? Already I've mentioned the purpose of the bill. That while the bill recognizes that it's going to introduce new players in the financial sector, we think that the bill must cover the contribution of cooperative banks to other types of cooperatives. It's not clear that in the bill. The bill, if you look at what it defines, what is a cooperative bank, it only refers its members as those who are natural persons, okay? People in a trade union, individual members in the trade union, individual members in a community, and so on, the common bond definition. We really think, and there's a huge international experience around this, because there's no one universal definition of a cooperative bank. We made an example of what in India cooperative banks are defined as, differently from what we have in the bill in Philippines as well. But what we want to make a point here is that the definition must include that even if I'm a barrier society, even if I'm a trade union, as a trade union, not just our members, as a trade union, I can be a member of a cooperative bank. I can open a bank account in a cooperative bank. That is not here in the definition, and therefore the role of cooperative banks in financing other types of cooperatives and so on. The other element is the democratic member control principle, which is found in the mother legislation, the Cooperatives Act of 2005, where it categorically points out that directors or leaders of the cooperatives are elected by the members. They are not appointed. In this section, several sections here, you know, perhaps not deliberately, but point to appointment of directors. We make reference to section 32 of the Act, for instance, where directors are said to be appointed. That could apply to a bank and other forms of institutions, but not in a cooperative. One member, one vote is an important principle, and we think it should not be contradicted by certain wording. For instance, the wording of an executive officer is quite confusing, because if you our understanding of executive officers would be your chairperson, your secretary, your treasurer, and so on. But if executive officer tended to be a staff or a senior staff person or a manager or and also a director, it confuses the two, because a director and a manager cannot be the same person in a cooperative. Directors are elected and they appoint managers in a cooperative. Okay. The other point we would like
to... The Act in this paragraph refers to the Cooperative Act.
Yes, it refers to that, but the second point, the second one of 63.3.8, when we talked about appointment,
in the bill.
So there's a contradiction there.
Okay.
It needs to be in line with the Cooperative Act.
Okay.
I've already made a point about the juristic membership, that we have a concrete proposal of how we can formulate it, because we think it may be a difficulty that the policymakers were concerned about, that if they would include juristic persons in the cooperative bank, it may contradict the Cooperative Act. But we have made a formulation, as we see in our proposal, around how we can include various societies and other institutions to become members of the cooperative bank at the primary level. The other factor is that our experience our studies confirm, including other experience, where co-ops have been successful, this type of cooperative bank, is where they have an access to the payroll system. Okay. And this is the United States, this is Kenya, where you've got large of these banks being established. However, they are called different names, credit unions and so on. But access to the payroll system has been an important factor of their success, the secret of their success. One of them. And we think that this should apply to this Act, that access to the payroll system should be legislated. And this is not strange, should not be seen strange. Other non-profit organizations like trade unions already have this in their act. The LRA makes clear provision that employers, on a written notice, they can be authorized to deduct particular subscriptions of the workers and so on. We really think, with regard to cooperative banks, that should also apply. And we have actually looked at the LRA and consulted with our lawyers and also come with a craft how that can be adapted to the Cooperative Act. Chairperson, this matter was raised at the briefings of the area of the briefings of the Cooperative Banks Bill, and there was a sense that the government officials were preoccupied that, look, if we do this, look, the pensioners will come, machinists will come, and all sorts of people will come also to have that access. And we think that that is not an appropriate answer when it comes to this question of the payroll reduction for cooperatives. First and foremost, that they are non-for-profit, as I explained. That's the first important. It's the members' money, and they are asking their own money to go to their own institution. in the same way as saying it's love itself. So that is a very, very important point to make, that we need to make a difference. And once again, we think that the members will seriously consider this issue of providing access to payroll deductions through the bill. I'm finishing now. Oh, I thought someone overheard something here. Okay. Cooperative Bank Agency, let's say it's called Cooperative Bank Development Agency. Here we really want to raise that. Look, if you read that development agency, what is going to do? I mean, that is fantastic developmental role that it needs to play, because these are emerging institutions, they'll breed capacity and so on. But if you relate the role of the agency with other types, with the other forms of cooperative banks, the secondary, there you find that there's a little confusion and contradiction. We are not sure whether this agency wants to directly drive support for the cooperative movement, or it wants to help existing secondary co-ops to assume that particular role. The concern is that if the agency itself drives that, it's going to be a very much independent and won't lead to self-sufficient development of the cooperative movement. But if it enters into a partnership, as it proposes here through accreditation, then the functions of the agency vis-a-vis the secondary cooperatives need to be clearly defined. We understand, we have engaged with the officials around this question, and we've been assured verbally that, look, this is not our intention. We want to empower secondary banks and so on. But let us see that in the act. Let it be very, very clear, so that when you are born as an official, you know, whatever you have assured us is in the act. So that we are quite clear about the different roles and functions of a secondary core bank as a support organization and a cooperative development agency. Then there is another point around convergence. We are just raising it because we think it may be important. There are cases that we know that need to be quite clear about convergence. We hear that the convergence are allowed for a savings or bank into another type of bank. But what about other entities that may want to convert themselves into cooperatives? A private bank, a small bank wants to come. We have a case now as the union, that one of our affiliates, which I don't want to mention in name, wants to consider converting one of their financial institutions into a cooperative bank. So we would like to see the Act also talking about the conversion of those kinds of entities into cooperative banks. Even existing subgroups, because they are already legal entities, what do you do if they meet those requirements and they want to become cooperative banks? Should they be converted or should they dissolve? And so on. So these are questions that we need to look at. Finally, is the tax treatment for co-ops. We are not making a very strong concrete proposal on this issue, because we think that maybe a matter that does not belong to the Act and may be considered. But there is no way that you can have a developmental aspect for cooperative banks and then you treat them tax-wise with other conventional banks. Therefore, because of the different nature of the co-op, that transactions are not with the public, but among members, there's a strong case for co-ops to be exempted from an income tax. precisely because they are member-based transactions are from that. And in fact, the United States, one of the countries which has the largest movement there, was the first to introduce income tax as early as the 70s. To this day, they still, those cooperative banks are exempted from tax. Okay. Just one example, there are thousands of those examples if you could think of it. But different types of tax treatment. But in this case, we really think that this is a very important issue to look at. And if you look at the chapter by chapter, those are the concrete recommendations we are making based on the weaknesses that we have just identified. We are making very, very concrete formulations, as I've said, around payroll deductions, around the purpose of the bill, what wage should be added, where, and so on. So with those ways, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. You know, I note with interest that this is a joint submission between Lehau and COSATU. And I would imagine Lehau as an affiliate of COSATU, is this was it excluded? How does it come about? Or did Lehau have a separate submission which then had to be incorporated?
Chairperson, this is a joint one because earlier Lehau has been active in the work and has developed its own positions, but we finally merged them together with COSATU and therefore just to recognize the work that our parliamentary office has done as well as the work of COSATU as well. So, yeah.
Chair, it's either to be politically correct, it's a COSATU position.
He mentions that in order to recognize the work that Lehau had done prior to it being incorporated into the broader one. Okay, there we have it, members. Questions, comments, and we actually have 5 minutes because the time that the Banking Association didn't use does not belong to COSATU. It's not automatic. If you want to retain the time back, I can actually call Mr. Kuvati to come back and use his time. Mr. Mloto, Mr. Gibson, Mr. Mare, Mr. Afia. Are there any other? Yeah, Mr. Johnson. I don't know. Mr. Johnson, you... What does this mean? Okay. Okay, can we... Yeah, we'll take those hands.
Chair, I just want to get some clarity on some few issues. In your submission, you're saying that members, directors must be elected, if I'm getting you correctly. Now, I just want to find out whether, in your view, the fit and proper section of this legislation, of this bill, must be done away with. We should not consider those other factors that have been stipulated within the fit and proper section. Secondly, I would want also to be clarified on a matter relating to the development agency. You are saying in your submission that more than 51% of the board members should be from the cooperative banking sector. I would argue that naturally when minister would appoint, would consider broad sections of our society, the expertise and role that they play, and obviously I think he would consider members of the cooperative movement in the appointment. But my problem is, if you start to say 51, more than 51 of the board, let's talk about a board of 100 and say 51. I mean, effectively, you are reducing that to a lobby group. That's my difficulty with your point. Chair, the second issue, I mean, take my hand and guide me through this area. You have got this area of your expertise. My little understanding would be that the board of directors of the cooperative bank would be appointed by members, would be elected by members. And the board of directors would then appoint directors of the cooperative bank based on their expertise, and that the fit and proper test would come in, and that supervisor of the cooperative bank has to agree to that appointment. Please guide me through it. That's not my area of expertise.
Mr. Gibson? Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to start by thanking Kusatu and Nahawu for a very thoughtful and detailed submission, which I think is very helpful. And I'd like to just observe that every generation thinks that we've discovered something new. We don't actually have to go to Kenya and to Berlin and places like that to see successful cooperatives. We have them right here in South Africa. The old mutual really started off that way. Sanlam started off that way. Sanlam belonged to its policyholders, not to shareholders. The Building Society, South African Permanent, originally was called South African Permanent Building, South African Permanent Mutual Building and Investment Society. And because they were successful, they eventually developed into the huge financial institutions that they became later. And it's my hope that some of these cooperatives will follow exactly the same path, and indeed in due course become owned by shareholders and operate for profit for the benefit of our society and our taxpayers. Now, I'd just like to ask you why you think that profits shouldn't be taxed. I mean, you mentioned in your submission that because they're going to be distributed on a democratic basis, which means each of the members gets some of the profit, that it shouldn't be taxed. I simply don't understand that. If there's a profit, it surely must be taxable. If you and I are in business together and we produce a little surplus and a little profit, it will be distributed democratically, half to you, half to me, and we'll pay tax on it. I think the cooperatives should do the same, and we hope that they do produce surpluses and do produce profits, because if they don't, they won't be able to expand, and they will not be able to provide banking services to an increasing pool of South Africans. The second aspect, and perhaps you'd comment on that, the second aspect relates also to what Mr. Malotha dealt with, and that's the question of directors and what you call direct democratic control by the members. May I put it to you that I think you've got a rather romantic view about this? Because it simply doesn't work if the cooperative is more than 50 or 60 people, you know, more than a decent room full of people. There are cooperatives that will have hundreds of members. And it simply falls outside what is envisaged in this bill, for you to stretch it to try to make it small and down home. Because in order to be registered, they've got to submit, for example, a lending policy. They've got to submit a savings policy. They've got to submit a business plan. So it's not subject to the members voting at the next meeting to change all of these things, which are provided for in Section 62, D, E, and F. The second thing is, in order even to qualify for representation, a cooperative bank has got to prove that it's got sufficient human, financial, and operational capacity to function efficiently and competently as a bank. And if it's subject to the vagaries and the will of a democratic vote of the members every time they want to throw somebody out or change, surely it's not going to be able to operate within the type of law and regulation which is necessary if it's to be recognized and registered as a cooperative bank. And then just a brief third one. You mean?
I think you're overstretching it. Can you limit for the next batch if you're able to have one? You know, in as much as I have a limit on the number of questions, I think I'm going to impose a limit on the time now, so that we can be able to make progress. I know. Don't start. Okay, because I have quite a number of friends and I would want to give everybody an opportunity. Mr. Malay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mine will link to those of my colleagues. I also would like to understand, you know, what the intentions is in your objectives. I mean, you're talking about this democratic bias. In other words, there's not profits, but there might be surpluses, which must not be taxed. Then you're also referring to membership. In other words, I'm not sure what the objective of the membership is and whether that is to add to the surpluses that must eventually be distributed. Part of that is if hypothetically you might have 20% of your members providing 80% of the funds, but you're talking about one member, one vote. So to what extent will that constituency then be represented? And one must look at this further to Treasury with the current financial position of the country. So should you hamper with the tax base of the country, it can obviously have an influence on the money available for Treasury. I don't know if you can maybe give me more clarity on those uncertainties and those concerns that I'm struggling with. Thank you, Chair. With the second round, I might have more questions.
Garcia.
Thanks, Chair. One thing I also have a question of clarity. The democratic and vis-a-vis their co-ops. Politically, whatsoever, doesn't make sense to me, because co-ops are driven by, any business is driven by profit. There's no democracy in business. This is my view, I might be wrong, but it is totally giving a contradiction. If you are elected in an organization, then you serve there on an elected basis and you can be voted out. There's no. The other thing is that I tend to agree to Honorable Member Gibson that your submission is very broad and substantive. I think this committee has to look into it and check what is important and what are the issues which we have to look at and begin to engage with primarily. And the issue as lawmakers, I'll speak as a lawmaker, once more, the issue of the preferential treatment on tax base. You haven't explained to me clearly that what type of a tax are you talking about. And to me, my little understanding of these issues, when you put a cent and you get a 3 cents, you have to be taxed on the 2 cents which you got when you make 3 cents. So, they speak in their own language, it's harder to think the French manner. You will be benefiting from your friend. Now, if now you are saying that I'm involved in a co-op, so I should not be taxed, to me, it's something else. But you can educate me more in terms of your understanding and, in that case. I don't want to go further, Chair, I respect that.
Mr. Johnson, are you still okay? Because actually I'm trying to see if we can take all of them. Because most of them are actually interrelated. So, yeah. Mr. Johnson.
Chair, the first one is a comment that we need to cooperate with the committee that deals with this matter of cooperatives as we move forward with this process. It's my humble submission. The first...
You don't look like you're humble.
No,
It's only Comrade Health here.
Proceed, Johnson. Your humble submission was accommodated before we came here.
The first comment here, maybe it goes back to National Treasury. You have raised it here. It's about progression and retrogression of the co-op bank. They graduate into the Old Mutuals and Sanlams, and they also go down into co-ops. You've made a last point on your submission about monitoring. We are a committee that does not even have, you know, a dedicated researcher here. And you worry me when you're saying that we should find ways of monitoring.
Ms. Hubs.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine, I think, is a very short and somewhat linked to the tax issues that have already come up and the issue of the payroll, utilising that as an instrument as well. I think one wants to thank Kasatu and Nahar for their very detailed input and submission, but in there it would be useful for someone like myself who supports the whole idea about using tax as an instrument for redistribution and so on, but also trying to broaden that tax base. And so it would be quite useful to learn a little bit more about what kind of approach or measures this submission could put on the table. Because I'll tell you what my concern is, having indicated my preference and support there, my concern is that if we look at Spain, if we look at the United States, and a number of other areas where co-ops have worked extremely well utilizing the tax exemption approach, we cannot ignore the fact that they don't share a characteristic that we have in our country, which indicates that perhaps more than 80% or at least 60% are way below reasonable income level compared to, say, Spain, the United States, and so on. So without distorting the tax base, and still utilizing tax as an instrument, it would be useful just to hear what kind of measure we can put on the table without destroying this delicate balance which is trying to bring about equity. Thank you.
Thank you. In the remaining 3 minutes, Teboko, if you could, Your other colleagues are also free to assist you, but if you...
Okay.
If you take a minute and then give a minute to each, that would be...
That
would be equitable.
Yeah, Chairperson, I think the questions have been quite useful, and I will attempt to respond to some of them. The first one, I think, is just a co-op or even a cooperative bank as a democratic enterprise. Whether this is a dream or a fantasy or something like that. This is an actual fact, okay, of how co-op structure is organized, is that members go to the annual general meeting, and at the general meeting they discuss strategic issues, business plans, and so on. At the general meeting, they decide also who should become a director of a cooperative. They elect the board of directors. Now it is up to the board of directors among themselves to decide who should be the chairperson, the secretary, and the other executive members. It's not that, you know, members are subjecting the decisions of a cooperative, the day-to-day operations of the cooperative to a general meeting. Actually, that is the function of a manager who is appointed, just like in other enterprises, who is appointed or hired by the board of directors. Now, because the board of directors are members, that one democratic feature of a cooperative is that even if they draft policies, they may draft
business plans or strategic planning and so on, is precisely because they are the members, they are guided by the decisions, the broad policies agreed upon with the members. So that's a very important principle. In the bill, there's also a provision for audit committee and supervisory committee. In most cooperative banks, also these committees are appointed by the members. Okay, the board can decide the policy of how the supervisory committee or audit committee can be elected. In our case in South Africa, in the form of savings and credit cooperative, we may elect one or three people, okay, including an auditor, and maybe part of that committee. But these are the committees that is elected independent of the board by the members. They check the books. They are the watchdog of the cooperative system. So this is a governance structure which might be strange if you come from a conventional bank where customers who open bank accounts don't know even who is the director of that FNB or IT. Here, the very members are the owners. They are actually the shareholders because you contribute a share in the cooperative. Which brings me to the question of how do you define profit in a cooperative? Okay, the Cooperative Act, which is already passed, is already operational, makes it very, very clear that a profit in a cooperative is quite different from how you use it in a cooperative. There are cooperative principles that guide cooperatives of how they should use their profits. In fact, much of that profit is reinvested into the cooperative. But it's not that, you know, we may decide that our people to maximize the values of the shareholders. Cooperatives are founded on need, not profit. So the money we get is to improve the services to our members. Or take the services to our members, the banking services, the products that we are developing, rather than maximizing value for the shareholders. That's a fundamental difference around how you allocate that from your conventional banking system. So it's not that we cooperatives don't produce what you call profit. They do in as much as they can, but the way they distribute it is what differentiates them from the conventional institution. Coming back to how that distribution is done, in a company or a cooperative bank or a conventional bank, we will pay you according to the value of your shares. Okay. In a cooperative, it's according to membership, not according to the value of your shares. We call it patronage proportion. How many times have I used the services of the cooperatives? And in the bank case, how many transactions I have there will determine the percentages we put aside for your share, which is maybe a nominal share. It's not a share in the same way like in a bank. I would like to make those important differences because it is precisely this transaction that takes place among the members, not with the public. Which means we borrow among ourselves, we grow among ourselves. If there is a surplus, surplus is nothing else. It's like we have overcharged ourselves. We just return that money back to us and build the cooperative. Precisely of those reasons, we cannot put a tax like we put in a conventional on the profits of those ones. Furthermore, the law is a compulsory, even in this act, it will be compulsory that some of these profits are put aside as reserves. There is a 5% now in the act. We think this is more than even what banks have no such regulation or companies have no such regulation. And if this applies to the cooperative banks, we think that if we say that certain portion of your surplus must go back to the cooperative, that also should be tax exempt. So it's a very, very important point about that. Lastly, I really like to share, compare that here. They are co-op and they are sudor co-op. Okay? Co-op that pretend they are co-op. Co-op that are undemocratic. Co-op that, degenerate. Okay? So you can't find a difference in how they operate and so on. And our experience of some of the South African examples are a testimony to that. In fact, I'm not sure whether we can even say all Bushwan and Sanlam were actually called in the real sense of the word. Okay. They were more of a conventional institution. They were more led by directors, even though theoretically the members must drive, policy holders must control. But they were, you know, led by self-perpetuating board of directors as such. So rather than member-led and so on. So the Cooperative Act protects members to practice this democracy and not to be undermined as such. I'm not sure if the issue of the agency, which I thought the members raised around why we were requesting a larger number of representatives from the corporate sector. We say this is a cooperative bank act. This is about us, the cooperative bank. Okay? Inasmuch as you have certain institutions that are advising the minister or supporting, they must be largely composed by those in the industry. It is those in the industry which have appropriate skills. We are not saying others may not be part of the, such an agency, but we think that it must be orientated and guided by the knowledge and an experience coming from the sector itself. So that is the main point why we are arguing for that. There was a point about democracy versus stringent rules of fit and proper persons. In fact, we did discuss this thing, and we thought that the way it is worded here, it may imply that you cannot have a director if he has not done accounting or he has not done certain banking skills and so on. We think that the way it is worded, that you have a knowledge of banking and so on, supported by the developmental aspects of the bill, which calls for training, which is something that is an ongoing in a cooperative, training of board of directors on their role and so on. That should not be, therefore, this provision will not compromise the people in a village who don't have those, but they want to form their own cooperative banks, to be excluded on the basis that, they don't have qualifications and things like that. We don't think that that is the spirit of the bank. We think it's more developmental as such. In fact, in most cases, in all corporates, in Kenya and so on, they are formed by ordinary people. Me and you are the ones who form this bank. It's not people, ordinary people, me and you, who own and run these things. So we don't think that the legislation was attempting to do that. What we are trying to correct is that directors are elected by that. We can form the rules of how we judge the competency of a director and so on. But that is subject to decisions by that cooperative and so on. It should not be that stringent as such. Okay. I think I have tried to cover as much. I might have left the other things, but the issue of tax is something that we have done a lot of study, not only consulting, but even through the NECLEC process. We did an international study toll report, which was submitted to the cooperative, to the portfolio committee on defense, on trade and industry, which they actually looked at some of the tax options that are available to cooperatives. And we would be happy to make that available as well for the members.
Well, thank you very much, Tibuko, and your team for enriching our engagement on this important bill. We trust that when we get responses from National Treasury and when this committee deliberates, we will apply our mind to some of the things you have raised with the charities you have provided. We break for tea, and can we please make it 10 minutes and be back here at exactly half past to take the next submission. Thank you.
The share should be treated as capital in private companies. But many of the accounting agencies at the moment don't want to treat it as equity capital. They want to treat it just as a long-term liability, or sometimes even a short-term liability. So this is why we're saying it should be stipulated as to how the share is treated.
Thank you. On the dot, 35 minutes exactly. You did very well. Thank you so much, and once again. Are you worried that they were within their time, Mr. Johnson?
No, it's just one quick one which has been addressed, but I just wanted an example of any bank or stock sale failure and liabilities thereof of individual members. Any specific case study you might have said?
We've been regulating the banks up 15 years, so we've dealt with a number of them. Luckily, none of them have been large failures, and that people have actually lost a lot of money. We've been able to, the word that we've used is rehabilitate. There's a number of ways we've done it. The one was we reported them to the Reserve Bank. They then operated illegally under the Banks Act. Then the Register of Banks has appointed us as the administrator of that particular cooperative bank, and then we've then gone and managed to pay out the depositors. But even now, as we stand now, we've had a cooperative where there's been large theft, no other way of putting it, that the board of directors and the manager colluded to give each other loans, started not paying back the loans, and you know, in a small cooperative, you just need four or five loans like that not to get repaid, and you can run into problems. So again, our concern again is as an NGO, we don't really have the capacity to go and do proper inspections of these cooperatives, which is the way it's required. So, I mean, there are a number of them, and we do have some of them written up as case studies. What we've done with some others is we've merged a couple of them together as well to try and avoid total failure. In fact, we've been able to borrow from there as well. So we've done a number of things. But having said that, I mean, we have one now that we're speaking to National Treasury about, in Sri Lanka in particular, where we are trying to find National Treasury support. Considering the National Treasury is supporting the bailing out or the payoff of many of the village banks at the moment and the financial services cooperatives that failed.
Thank you. We move on to the next submission by the Business Parliamentary Office of Business Unity South Africa and the Chamber of Commerce and Industry Chapter. Are you going to require the technology? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman, honourable members. May I use this opportunity with your indulgence, Mr. Chairman, just to introduce my colleague here, Mr. Abdul Waheed Patel, who's just been appointed as the Parliamentary Liaison Officer for the Business Parliamentary Office. As the Chair and members of this Honourable Committee will know, the purpose of the Business Parliamentary Office is to try and consolidate the input of organised business into this Portfolio Committee and others, and particularly the voice of BUNZA, Business Unity South Africa, and CHAMSA, the Chambers of Commerce and Industry South Africa, which would include VAHI, AFCOC, SAPCOC, and SACOC as its members.
And sorry for not introducing you.
Okay.
Advocate Mering is almost part of the Seneca here.
I'm hoping to become a lead part of the Seneca.
And welcome, Mr. Patel.
And maybe Mr. Patel can then take us through the process that was followed in putting together our submission today.
Thank you, Abhi, Chairperson, Honourable Members. As Abhi indicated, the Business Parliamentary Office represents organized business formations in South Africa broadly. That's a family of associations under CHAMSA, Chambers of Commerce and Industry South Africa, and then Business Unity South Africa. On behalf of our constituencies, we want to thank the committee for the opportunity to make input on the submission. We solicited input from our key constituencies very broadly, and very specifically, as Mr. Kuvaria indicated in his input, being Vice President of BUSA, but also wearing his cap as Managing Director of the Banking Association, we felt it prudent to inform him of our views collectively as business on the bill and to engage him on the position they would be taking as association. I think there is a meeting of sentiments between our submission and his own. In keeping with the overall sentiment expressed by different presenters in the submissions today, I think we can safely say that as the Business Parliamentary Office, we will welcome the introduction of the bill as a further progressive step towards ensuring continuous improvement of access to a variety of viable banking products and services for the South African nation. More importantly, to appropriately regulate what is currently an unregulated activity. In considering the various aspects of the bill, I think it's important to note that this bill before us builds progressively on the existing suite of measures. Here I refer to the cooperative policy previously developed by government and subsequently the Cooperatives Act a few years ago. And I think the idea is that these collectively will contribute to the creation of an enabling and supportive legislative environment for a viable cooperative movement. Having said that, I think we all agree that access to sustainable cooperative financial services for this type of movement is an important consideration in order for such a movement to fully realize its potential social and economic benefits that the cooperative movement can play in our national development. To elaborate on some of these more specifically, I'll hand back to Advocate Mering, who will deal with various aspects and dimensions of the bill that we've identified and which are elaborated in our submission.
Thank you, Chair. The first issue we'd like to highlight is the issue of institutional and administrative governance. It is a very strong common view of the members who gave input to organized business that the institutional governance and administrative accountability of cooperative banks is of the utmost importance. Good governance and accountability is there to protect the interests of those that serve, and in the cooperative banking movement, this is more important than in other kinds of institutions. We believe this is of critical importance, and we think that the bill has captured this in the legislative instruments as well as the institutional arrangements that have been put forward. We would prefer some further clarity on the application of FICA, the Financial Advisors and Intermediary Services Act, as well as the National Credit Act. It is very important, and it is our view that they are applicable, but it is also important, particularly in the case of the Financial Advisors and Intermediary Services Act, to spell that out. One can foresee a situation where intermediaries may get involved in the promotion of the activities of cooperative banks, and in those circumstances, FICA should apply, as should FICA and the National Credit Act. Business trusts, Chair, that when the regulations are developed under this Act, that they will build on the good governance and accountability principles that are in the bill at this point in time. There is a danger that regulation can dilute the principles of governance and administration, and we would like to strongly urge that that is not the case, that they actually strengthen what is to be strengthened, because at the end of the day, one is looking at consumer protection in this particular field. Second point we'd like to highlight is the question of increasing access to autonomous financial services. My colleague has already alluded to the fact, and that is a sentiment that certainly we've been hearing from National Treasury in the briefing and also in the very resource substantive inputs that we listened to today. that one is looking at a real potential for access to finance being improved in the country. Access to the payroll system, insofar as that is a necessary requirement, we would support. But insofar as, for example, the limit is currently placed at the primary level, we think it was well motivated by National Treasury as to why that is the case at this point in time. We also believe that the bill will improve personal savings and investment. One is acutely aware of the fact that we are currently also considering as a nation a national social security fund, which will play a role in this context. One is also of the view, our members, that broad-based black economic development will be served by the corporate bank bill, particularly insofar as it would provide access to small and medium enterprises, which are currently in the informal economy, but more and more coming into the formal economy thanks to the tax amnesty that we've seen a year or so ago. In that context, we believe the bill could also contribute to job creation. The development of skills that was offered this morning by the Banking Association in terms of the people involved in cooperative banking is also very pertinent in the area of job creation and skills development. Ultimately, we believe that the diversity of possible cooperative banking types which are provided for in the bill augurs well in this regard of addressing these critical national issues. Thirdly, Chair, we'd like to refer to the issue of how do we go about the progressive build-up versus the rapid uptake of the cooperative banking in South Africa. On reflection, and coming from our members, business is in favor of this legislation resulting in a steady build-up and organic growth of the cooperative banking establishments in the country, as opposed to a rapid wholesale uptake. This is not to suggest in any way that we do not see the merits of these institutions, as we tried to highlight already. Rather, we believe that the registration, the licensing, and the management of cooperative banks should be carried out appropriately to avoid unintended consequences which undermine and jeopardize the intent of the legislation. We have been encouraged to hear this sentiment, also coming from National Treasury in their submission on the 22nd. Such organic growth, Chair, would also help us as a country to deal with one of the difficulties that we do face, namely the implementation of particularly robust legislation, which this undoubtedly is, and an opportunity to also amend the legislation as we go along to cater for the needs that are unforeseen in this particular context. We would also like to, in this context, refer to the value and the importance of trying to build on what is world best practice in this field. Our National Treasury has got a proud track record for being sensitive to world best practice in submissions that have come before Parliament. One of our members in organized business, the South African Chamber of Business, is the private sector liaison for the World Bank. And we would like to draw to the attention of the committee the work that the World Bank has done in this particular field. A recent publication from the World Bank called Making Finance Work in Africa, published in 2007, is certainly very, very useful reading in the context of the cooperative movement and how they have succeeded and, more importantly, how it has also failed in Africa, and so that we can take full account of the lessons that can be learned from this. We refer to two examples in our submission, namely the one in Benin, which was not such a happy occasion, and the very, very successful Kenya cooperative bank. Notwithstanding the distinct needs and challenges facing South Africa in terms of cooperative banks, we believe that in this context also, Chair, linkages with international work in this field is going to be important, and we think that one of the key functions of the Cooperative Development Agency has got to be to establish these linkages if they're not already existing, and certainly to strengthen them and to build on them going forward. This could lead to very productive collective research also that could take us all into a situation where the real principle of mutuality, which actually underlines cooperative banks, can serve the country very, very well. We cannot step off our written submission without referring to the issue of taxation, Chair, because it has been raised in this committee. We didn't cover it in our submission for obvious reasons. It wasn't part of the actual bill. We are aware of the fact that this is currently being considered by National Treasury and South African Revenue Service. Broadly, and I can speak here holding a brief for the Tax Committee of Business Unity South Africa and SACOP, it would be the view of organized business that one's got to be very careful
not to target tax incentives to specific to institutions, but rather to activities. That would be the principle. We must be coherent in our tax policy. If we think, for example, that we do tax in this country public benefit organizations when they do get involved in trading activities. As from last year, we tax clubs in this country when they get involved in trading activities. There should in principle, therefore, be no reason why a cooperative bank on its activities that goes beyond the building up of surplus for members should not be taxed. It begs the question, of course, as to whether members of cooperatives would actually experience tax. In practice, it is my humble view that they won't, simply because of the tax threshold in the country applicable to individuals, as well as the tax exemptions for interest payments, which are extremely generous. And we've adjusted those in every single budget over the last 5 years, consistently way above the inflation rate. So to an extent, the tax issue could be, with the greatest respect, a bit of a red herring in this context. Nevertheless, one would be looking forward to see any suggestions in this regard in the medium-term budget policy statement around about October this year. Finally, Chair, in conclusion, we would like to say as organized business that we want to commend the process that was followed in regard to the cooperative bank bill. Being a member of the Public Finance and Monetary Policy Chamber of NEDLAC, I can vouch for the fact that this is certainly one of the perhaps rare occasions where consultation in NEDLAC has really led to a situation where there's a significant meeting of the minds as we sit here today. And that must certainly have been obvious also to honourable members of this committee that business and labour, for example, seems to agree on the substance of the cooperative banks bill to a large extent. Of course, government as well. We believe that that is a process that can only hold well for the future, particularly in the context, I must add, of the retirement fund reform and social security, which is currently undergoing, Chairman.
Yes. I think we are in a session of Parliament as this committee. In terms of the rules of Parliament, that members of the public cannot interfere with the proceedings of Parliament. I just had one interjection from a member of public, and I didn't hear your ruling with this regard. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Yeah, no, the rules were not read to the members of the public.
And therefore, Chair, they apply, given if they are
okay.
Chair, I was just concluding my presentation, and I'd like to hand over to Mr. Patel, who would just like to make an announcement in conclusion.
Thank you, Abhi. Just given the very broad constituency that we represent, we think it's appropriate that the Business Parliamentary Office offers its assistance to the committee, that should there be any specific detailed inquiries that the committee has on the nature of the submission that we've made. Our delegation here is very small today, but we'd be very happy to bring the full wealth of expertise that lie within our family of associations to the committee to engage on any specific details that the committee may want to hear about. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we welcome your availability as long as it doesn't bother on conflict of interest on our part. We have a very thin line. Thank you. Questions, comments? Mr. Gibson?
Chairperson, thank you very much. I was almost on the point of asking what's wrong with a bill that has the support of business, of labour, of CASATU, of the Chamber of everything. There must be something wrong with the bill if they are all unanimous about it, but the presenters have told us it's because there was such a thoroughgoing consultation process by National Treasury. And I think it's been written and rewritten. Even the communists are supporting it. So there we are. Well, the day the Chamber of Business and the Chambers of Commerce and the communists agree on something, that shows that there's a fundamental principle that's worth supporting, which I support as well, which is access to banking.
I can't get those numbers wasn't from the gallery again. It puts me in a very difficult situation with the members of the committee who uphold the rules of Parliament to
I was almost tempted to go on a tangent about communism. I went to China and I discovered what communism was, and I'm all in favour if that's the problem. There are two. I might have to explain if you keep on interrupting me. There's a reference here to the investment criteria for cooperative banking establishments, and a suggestion that that should be included in the regulations. Now, I generally dislike regulations. I like Parliament to prescribe as much as possible, because regulations, which are called delegated legislation, really mean that the minister and the department can do what they like, and Parliament has very little control over it afterwards. Would you comment as to whether it would be appropriate for us to introduce something into the bill relating to that aspect? And secondly, you mentioned that FICA and FICE must also be applicable to these cooperative banks. I haven't looked at the legislation of those two. Would that require legislation to amend those two acts, or are you suggesting we should introduce an amendment to this bill to make it clear that FICA and FICE do apply?
Ms. Fox.
Thank you, Chairperson. The convergence of capital and the bulk of the unbanked sector of South Africa is quite interesting. But, Chairperson, if I may, there are just two points here. There's a reference to business being in favour of this legislation, supporting a steady build-up rather than a wholesale take-up, and so on. Now, when I looked at this, it may have been perhaps simplistic. I was rather hoping there's going to be a huge take-up on this front, and that the co-ops would just expand quite rapidly and so on. The whole purpose, I mean, the majority of South Africans are unbanked, don't have access to finance. So perhaps you could just explain this, and maybe I got the more simplistic version or understanding, because this also relates to a comment made by the IMF in its paper, which indicated that the rapid expansion of co-ops and so on could also create an environment of competitiveness, would put competitive pressure on other financial institutions. And in view of this closed financial oligarchy which exists in our country, it could be quite useful to have this competitive thrust from another quarter. So that's the first question. The other one is, I'm always interested in these unintended consequences, and perhaps the presenters would be able to give me some idea of what we could expect.
Okay, quick responses.
The issue of regulation under the Act, it was precisely in that context that we made the point, honourable members, that the business feels very strongly that the regulation should not in any kind of way dilute the principles of good governance. And that would also, and accountability, and that would also include the regulations that actually deal with the investments by cooperatives. We know that it is an issue that's going to be dealt with in regulation, which we share the view of the honourable questioner is not ideal, but that is the case. And as long as the principle is adhered to, that does not dilute, we would have to go along with that. As far as the application of FICA and FICA is concerned, it is our legal assessment that FICA is applicable to the cooperative banks bill. It is not entirely clear whether the FICA Act is applicable to me as a lawyer, having read and studied this. I don't want to make a final view on that, but I would submit that maybe the state law advisors, with great respect, do canvas that particular issue. It seems like the National Credit Act certainly is applicable. As far as the issue of rapid uptake is concerned, Chair, our submission on that point is informed by the work of the World Bank in this context, in the publication I referred to earlier, and if I may, with your permission, quote from this publication, where they refer to the Benin example as having been a massive example of a cooperative bank, and then quote, in that case, among the many lessons learned was that the realization by the network that rapid growth under the impulse of lines of credit at the expense of good financial management can jeopardize an institution's sustainability. and so on and so forth. The kind of unintended consequences that one can see in this context have been highlighted towards the end of the SACOL presentation, and those are the consequences that need to be avoided. At the end of the day, when one's dealing with banking, and this is the view of business, when one's dealing with banking, reputation is of the utmost importance. And therefore, every single opportunity to avoid a denting of that reputation, particularly in the initial stages of the cooperative banking movement, should be grabbed with both hands, and we should err on the side of caution in introducing this new institution.
Yeah, thank you. That then brings us to the end of the session. I want to take this opportunity to thank all the presenters, starting with the Competition Commission, the Banking Association, COSATU and NEHAU, Savings and Credit Cooperative, League of South Africa Limited, Business Parliamentary Office. We also are in receipt of written submissions of those people that actually have not come to make oral presentations, like the Standard Bank, Yeba Cooperative Limited, University of Pretoria, South African Reserve Bank, Thomas Matthew, H. de Villiers, and members are in possession of these, and the National Treasury also is, and we trust that in your responses on Friday, you would also be responding to those that have not made oral submissions. We look forward to a healthy engagement which continues to enrich the same process that has been referred to, that seems to have actually, you know, gathered so much support from, I mean, it's not possible to get 100% you know, consensus and agreement on any matter. But I would imagine here the principle of sufficient consensus seems to be the our approach. But here we are. We will meet again on Friday when National Treasury will respond, and then the committee will apply its mind, and we will take the process forward from there. Thank you very much. That brings us to the end of this meeting. Yes, we are meeting tomorrow. We meet, members, we meet tomorrow, Wednesday the 29th, where the minister will be briefing us on his attendance at the International Fora and the hosting of the G8, which was postponed last Friday. That meeting is tomorrow. And the venue is Good Hope Chambers, which is, yeah.
But what happens is that you still attach it into the thing. Yeah. Someone else told me that they don't want to keep it, because it's just for me.